All glories to the temple glories. All glories to the temple glories. All glories to Shri Guru Mahārāj. one, except he has appeared just like an American movie star. So I was thinking I could say that these colors, these green colors in my Christmas time, get away with it as well, but there's something along those lines. A way of showing that Christmas is very beautiful. So reading from Srila Prabhupada Dhammika Vasudevas Goswami, chapter called Planting a Seed, and this person named Michael Grant is speaking here. And I said a dead man because I believe it changed my name, but that's a better point. I first heard about the initiation just one day before it was to take place. I had been busy with my music and hadn't been attending. I was walking down 2nd Avenue with one of the prospective initiates, and he mentioned to me that there was going to be something called an initiation ceremony. I asked what it was about, and he said, "All I know is it means that you accept the spiritual master as God." This was a big surprise to me, and I hardly knew how to take it. But I didn't take it completely seriously. And the way it was mentioned to me in such an offhand way made it seem not very important. He asked me very casually whether I was going to be involved. And I, also being very casual about it, said, "Well, I think I will. Why not? I'll give it a try." Jan didn't think she would make an obedient disciple, and initiation sounded frightening. She liked the Swami, especially cooking with him, but it was Mike who convinced her he was going, so she should come along with him. Carl Jurgens knew something about initiation from his readings, and he, more than the others, knew what a serious commitment it was. He was surprised to hear that Swamiji was offering initiation, and he was cautious about entering into it. He knew that initiation meant no illicit sex, intoxication, or meeting, and an initiated disciple would have new responsibilities for spreading the teaching to others. Carl was already feeling less involved since the Swami had moved to 2nd Avenue, but he decided to attend the initiation anyway. Bill Epstein had never professed to be a serious disciple. Holding initiation was just another part of the Swami's scene, and you were free to take it seriously or not. He figured it was all right to take initiation even if you weren't serious. He would try it. Carol Becker was surprised to hear that some people would be taking initiation even though they had no intentions of giving up their bad habits. She had stopped coming around regularly ever since the Swami had moved, and she felt no desire to ask for initiation. The Swami probably wouldn't initiate women anyway, she figured. Robert Nelson hadn't forgotten the Swami and always liked to help whenever he could. But except for an occasional friendly visit, he had stopped coming. He mostly stayed to himself. He still lived uptown and wasn't into the Lower East Side scene. James Green thought he wasn't pure enough to be initiated. Who am I to be initiated? But the Swami had asked him to bring something over to the storefront. I came, and it was just understood that I was supposed to be initiated, so I thought, why not? Stanley had been chanting regularly again and had come out of his crazy mood. He was sticking with the Swami and his followers. He asked his mother if he could be initiated, and she said it would be all right. Dee wanted more to think about it. Keith was in the hospital. Bruce had been attending for a week or two, and it was too soon. Chuck was on a week's vacation from the regular spiritual life at the temple, so he couldn't know about the initiation. Read one more paragraph. No one was asked to shave his head, or even cut his hair, or change his dress. No one offered Prabhupada the traditional guru dakshin, the donation a disciple is supposed to offer as a gesture of his great obligation to his master. Hardly anyone even relieved him of his chores, so Swamiji himself had to do most of the cooking and other preparations for the initiation. He was perfectly aware of the mentality of his boys, and he didn't try to force anything on anyone. Some of the initiates didn't know until after the initiation, when they had inquired, that the four rules, no meat eating, no illicit sex, no intoxication, and no gambling, were mandatory for all disciples. Prabhupada's reply then was, "I am very glad that you are finally asking me that." I think that you need to push it up here. I won't pick up very well.
Navai nivritti dharmena. Savai nitti dharmena. Vasudevanu kampaya. Bhagavad bhakti yogena. Bhagavad Bhakti Yogena. Tirodate Shanariha. Tirodate Shanariha. Savai Nivritti Dharmena. Vasudevanu Kampaya. Bhagavad Bhakti Yogena. Tirodate Shanariha. Savai Nivritti Dharmena. Vasudevanu Kampaya. Bhagavad Bhakti Yogena. Tirodhatte Shanariha. Savai Nivritti Dharmena. Vai also. Nivritti, detachment. Dharmena, by engagement. Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Anukampaya, by the mercy of Bhagavad, in relation with the Personality of Godhead. Bhakti Yogena, by linking up. Tirodhate, diminishes. Shanahai, gradually. Iha, in this existence. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. But that misconception of self-identity can be diminished gradually by the mercy of the Personality of Godhead Vasudeva through the process of devotional service to the Lord in the mode of detachment, responsibly. But that misconception of self-identity can be diminished gradually by the mercy of the Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, through the process of devotional service to the Lord in the mode of detachment, purport by Srila Prabhupada. The quivering quality of material existence, which comes from identification with matter, or from thinking oneself under the material influence of philosophical speculation to be God, can be eradicated by devotional service to the Lord by the mercy of the Personality of Godhead Vasudeva, as discussed in the first canto, because the application of devotional service to Lord Vasudeva invites pure knowledge. It quickly detaches one from the material conception of life and thus revives one's normal condition of spiritual existence, even in this life, and frees one from the material winds which cause one to quiver. Only knowledge in devotional service can elevate one towards the path of liberation. The development of knowledge for the purpose of knowing everything without rendering devotional service is considered fruitless labor, and one cannot get the desired result by such labor of love. Lord Vasudeva is pleased by devotional service only, and thus his mercy is realized by association with pure devotees of the Lord. Pure devotees of the Lord are transcendental to all material desires, including the desire for the results of fruitive activities and philosophical speculation. If one wants to acquire the mercy of the Lord, he has to associate with pure devotees. Such association alone can, by degrees, release one from the quivering elements. Om Gyanati Menanda Sagaranjana Salakaya Chaksurun Vitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manuvistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Karamayam Parati Svaparante Kam Ukam Karoti Vachalam Angam Langaya Tegirim Yakripa Taraham Bande Paramananda Bhadavan. Prabhupada used this word quivering 3 times in the purport. It's kind of an unusual word. We don't use it very often. Quiver. Sometimes I've heard devotional service compared to an arrow that's quivering in the center of its target. Prabhupada's using it here to indicate that material existence is rippling or rumbling or unsteady, somehow not calm and placid, not like the soul, which is unchanging and always the same. Of course, the soul is dragged through different kinds of material existence by our conditioned mentality, and we become conditioned souls. The nature of material life is tottering. That's another word Prabhupada used. It's tottering on the brink of the precipice, we might say. There's that nice illustration we see in the Bhagavad Gita, the picture of the chariot being pulled by the horses around a path. It's on the side of a mountain. On one side is the mountain, on the other side is the precipice. This indicates that material life is very dangerous. Our senses are out of control, like the wild horses. At any moment, they could gallop off the precipice and lead the soul, chariot, and the soul, chariot the body, the soul, to destructive sequences, to a destructive future. Yesterday, a man was asking in the Sunday festival about the comparison between service, devotional service, and pure devotional service, and he wanted to know how you get from one to the other. Does devotional service become pure devotional service? So that was a very interesting question, because we often encounter Prabhupada using this word pure, or the phrase pure devotional service. And here he says that the quivering quality of material existence, which comes from identifying with matter, can be eradicated by devotional service to the Lord. Devotional service, as I was explaining to him yesterday, starts with impure or motivated desires. There's a mixture. Sometimes it's called kama mishra bhakti, a mixture of purity and impurity. All devotional service actually starts that way. And there's a well-known verse in the third chapter of the second canon, which goes kama sarva kama va moksha kama udarati. It's a famous verse in which it's explained by Srila Prabhupada in his translation that he says a person with broader intelligence, whether he be full of material desires or free from material desires or desiring liberation, must without any hesitation engage in the process of devotional service. By all means worship the Supreme Holy Personality of Godhead, Yajeta Purusham Param. So this means that bhakti yoga is so powerful that even if it's impure in the beginning, even if it's devotional service that's not devoid of jnana and karma or anything else, desires to have liberation, in the traditional sense, the word moksha, to just be free of the material world, to get liberated in some way, then it should still be engaged in, because it's devotional service. And as Prabhupada says, it is by devotional service that we can get rid of this quivering existence. And he says, this devotional service detaches one from material condition and revives our normal condition of spiritual existence, even in this life, and frees from the material winds which cause one to quiver. It's a very interesting metaphor he's used, because sometimes another word might be shiver, when there's a cold wind. We stand out in the cold wind and we shiver. So he's comparing the material nature, like a wind causes us to quiver, or like a cold wind that causes us to shiver. It's not very pleasant. We're walking along, and all of a sudden there's an icy wind that comes up, and it just causes us to shiver or ripple or whatever. It's not very pleasant. So this is the way he compares material life. He illustrates it. It's not pleasant. The feeling isn't good, and it causes us to react in a way that's not very comfortable, it's not pleasing. And we're instructed in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, Matra Sparsha Sukhanti, that we have to tolerate these kinds of things. We have to learn, as transcendentalists in the material world, we have to learn that it's not always going to be a walk in the woods or a picnic at the beach, as they say. But there's going to be all sorts of tribulations that come across. A transcendentalist learns how to expect these things. A transcendentalist learns to tiksha karunaka, to tolerate these things without being disturbed. A transcendentalist knows that these are a part of existence and prepares to tolerate them. This is one of the values that people are sometimes very distraught because they're not being taught in school. Young children scream when things don't go their way. Sometimes they fight, sometimes they kill when they're not satisfied. When they don't get what they want, just like little children, 1, 2, 3 years old, if they don't get to eat when they want, if they're not warm when they want to be warm, if they don't get a drink of water, they start to scream and cry, and it gets very annoying. Adults are in the same mode because they're not trained to go beyond that. They're not trained to tolerate in their life. So when they don't get what they want, they also tend to be violent, to scream, to kick and cry, and do all kinds of things that are considered to be inhuman or debilitating to the finer sentiments of human life. So this is a very interesting verse because it tells that we have to begin devotional service at any point, at any time, whether we're full of desires, whether we want liberation, whether we have no desires. Devotional service is so powerful that it will purify us and we'll come to the pure devotional platform. So I'm going to read a little bit what Prabhupada said about this verse in the second canto. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, is described as Purushottama, the Supreme Personality. It is he only who can award liberation to the impersonalists by absorbing such aspirants in the Brahma Jyoti, the bodily rays of the Lord. The Brahma Jyoti is not separate from the Lord, as the glowing sun ray is not independent of the sun disk. Therefore, one who desires to merge into the supreme impersonal Brahma Jyoti must also worship the Lord by Bhakti Yoga, as recommended here in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhakti Yoga is especially stressed here as the means of all perfection. In the previous chapters, it has been stated that Bhakti Yoga is the ultimate goal of both Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga. And in the same way, in this chapter, it is emphatically declared that Bhakti Yoga is the ultimate goal of the different varieties of worship of the different demigods. Bhakti Yoga, thus being the supreme means of self-realization, is recommended here. Everyone must seriously, therefore, take up the methods of Bhakti Yoga, even though one aspires for material enjoyment or liberation from material bondage. When one aspires for anything, a big position, whether it be a heavyweight championship or a top goalie in the rugby team or a top sailor for America's Cup or an aspiring jnani, someone who wants to get a PhD or be great in any field, a great leader, a great politician, there's tremendous endeavor involved, and it's a very graduated process. It's stratified. You go step by step, and finally, if karma wants you to and Krishna approves, you can attain the highest rung of the championship or the supreme position in one of these fields. But Bhakti Yoga is a little bit different. Although there is a gradual and step-by-step process to attain perfection, one can come to the highest level of perfection straight away. It doesn't have to take many, many years and a long endeavor. It may only come in glimpses, but it does come, and one can be on that pure devotional platform by sincerely desiring to do so. And we've seen that this is actually possible, that one can be very elevated, even from a very lowly beginning. From the very start, some people have some special dispensation or special sincerity, or maybe it's due to their karma, and for this reason, they find themselves at the very beginning speaking to many people, going out and distributing books and lecturing and speaking to sometimes people who have become very elevated in terms of jnana, very wise people, so-called scholars. Once Prabhupada said that any of our boys can defeat even the greatest scholar. Any of our boys, meaning people that were at that time, it was in the late 60s, they couldn't have been more than a few years along in devotional service, to defeat even the greatest scholars. And the reason for this is that in devotional service, we have one special instruction. We've learned something, some philosophical point that's different, and that is that we're not the body. We've learned that we're the Atma, or we're the soul. This type of knowledge is not being taught anywhere. It hasn't been learned by anyone. It's not part of the body of knowledge of any of the greatest scholars in the world. When they hear even a neophyte, one who may not even be very well versed in history and philosophy, they're very interested. They find this is something unique. It's not being taught by any religion. It's not being taught in any philosophy. It's not being taught or learned anywhere. So in this way, one who starts devotional service comes to this very elevated, very lofty platform of philosophical understanding, something that others are unaware of. This is one of the reasons why people like Wordsworth and Thoreau and Goethe and other philosophers and scholars and